Can you guys keep it down? I'm trying to tweet here, please.
What are you tweeting?
I'm just tweeting. Okay. Just a picture of the new crew since we changed, since Dave Ennett had to leave and Andy Mazur is here.
Came into the bullpen.
Bradley graduate, Peoria,
yes,
P-Town.
Yep.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Shouldn't we be in, like, you know, the alumni newspaper? Let's take a picture today. I'll send in a picture.
Once in a while, it would be nice to see our faces in that.
We need a celebrity, though. Do you guys do that? You send in pictures back to your school?
I don't send the pictures.
Nobody does?
No.
Oh, I do. You got to make your own press.
I was going to say, this might be the one we're getting in there.
Hence the banners on the window.
Yeah. Ray LaHood, former Secretary of Transportation, when he came in, he's my cousin, so I made him come by. We took a picture, and I was in the alumni newspaper.
Nice.
That's how you got to do it, or the newsletter that they send out.
Yep. The Hill Topics.
Right.
Does anybody read that? Come on.
Nobody, but they look at the pictures and they throw it away.
I read the class notes. That's all I read.
That's it. And if your picture's in there, they're going to say, wow, he looks great.
He's doing good.
Wow. Look at that guy. Yeah.
I used to date him in college. Uh-huh. Yeah, trying to make all my old girlfriends jealous. How about this guy? How would you like to be a stud on a PGA Tour? Wouldn't that be great?
That'd be awesome.
God, I got to work on my golf game. Kevin Streelman is from Winfield. He's going to be playing in the John Deere Classic in the Quad Cities, and we have him on the phone. Kevin, congratulations. How you doing, man?
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Kevin, where'd you go to high school?
Wheaton Warrenville South.
Oh, yeah. Sure. Did you play golf there? I'm sure you did.
A little more known for football than our golf team, but yeah, I did play. I was one of the golf nerds at that time, and now all my football buddies wish they'd played golf. Now they're got an ailing bad backs and knees, but we went to Wheaton Warrenville South. So.
And you went on to Duke, and I go to Duke every year for a college basketball game, but we play golf there, and it's behind that one hotel on campus. Is that where you used to golf?
Yep, that's our home course there, the Washington Duke Inn and Golf Course there, and it was a great place to play and kind of hone my game, and there's a great university to attend as well.
In Ed Ibargan, is he still around there?
Yeah, Eddie I. Yeah, he was taught Michael Jordan how to play.
Yes.
But, you know, he went to UNC.
Right.
Eddie's been there forever. He's a great, great guy, a great friend, and he's a great pro there in the Durham area.
If people don't know, he taught Michael Jordan, you know, well, it helped Michael with his golf game. They're best friends, and Ed's known for, you know, being the golf pro at Duke.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Kevin, we were talking earlier about our golf game. I actually turn my body if I'm shooting to the right, if I'm slicing to the right, I turn my body to the left. Andrea didn't think that was such a good idea.
No, but he has the look, though, Kevin. You have the total look with colors and the cool clothes.
If you line up all the golfers in the world, I'm on the bottom of the list, okay? I fully admit I'm a terrible golfer, but I can dress like a golfer. I can look like a golfer. And if you see me from far away, my follow-through, I'll hold it just so people think that I'm a good golfer. But if you're golfing with me, I'm terrible.
Just play fast.
I'm just terrible, man. Just play fast. That's all people care about. That's it. We're talking with Kevin Streelman. He'll be in the John Deere Classic in the Quad Cities. Are you a little nervous about this?
No.
Not at all. You don't get nervous before a tournament, or you get excited or anything?
I get more excited than nervous, but this is now year 7 on the PGA Tour, which is amazing how quickly it's gone. But I've played in a number of tournaments kind of my whole life, and this is it's a great one to be so close to home and where I grew up. And I got a bunch of great friends and family that'll be out there, so it's always a great week. And it's a course I love to play out there at TPC, and from there I head to the British Open. But a couple fun weeks coming up. We start to get pretty busy here as the tour kind of comes to a close. But it's an exciting stretch.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you too. I mean, you mentioned the British Open's up next, and that tournament out there is a pretty good tournament. It's a nice warm up for that for the British Open, isn't it?
Yeah, they do a great job over there. Like I said, it's a good Midwestern feel. The people are awesome. The course is great. They get a plane that we take straight from Moline over to this year, right straight into Liverpool. So it's nice and convenient. It's a little easier through customs and everything. And we'll wake up Monday morning, hopefully get some sleep on that flight, and I'll have to go do a practice round in Hoylake. But it's a different type of golf than we'll be playing this week, that's for sure.
Okay, not that we would ever compare ourselves to you, but I'd like to try and get at least one birdie a month.
Oh, stop it.
Seven birdies in the final seven holes to win the Travelers. I mean, what's going through your mind after, say, four birdies? Five?
You know, the first four, I had wedges into the holes, and one of them was a par five. I kind of expected to make them, and then the putts just started going in, and then I made a really long putt at 16, the fifth birdie, and then I kind of felt something special was happening. And then I knew I had to hit great tee shots on 17 and 18 to be able to attack the holes, and I hit the fairway in both of them and hit awesome wedges in there inside of, you know, the 17. I hit about 3 feet and just made that one, and then 18, I got it about 10 footer up the hill and just buried it. So I didn't really count when it was happening, but when I got done and kind of heard that it hadn't been done before, and just as, you know, it was a dream come true to be able to finish a golf tournament like that.
Are you superstitious? Once it starts moving, you just don't want to, you want to do everything exactly the same way?
I try not to be overly superstitious. I do like wearing my Duke Blue shirt on Sundays if I'm in contention, and that's helped me win a couple times, but there's also a couple times it hasn't, but you try and forget about those. But, you know, you can go crazy if you let yourself get too superstitious with this game. So I try to not let myself go overboard with it.
You know, I'm kind of the same way. I wear Bradley University boxers when I fill in for Steve Cochran.
Oh, God.
Same thing. It's like
as long as you wash them.
Yeah. Right, exactly. You gotta wash those puppies. And your wife is an athlete, too. Is that right?
Yeah, she was a competitive swimmer. That Arizona State, graduated from Arizona State. We met out there in Phoenix, Arizona. And she was almost an Olympic swimmer, to be honest. She wouldn't tell many people about it, but she was just a few tenths of a second away from like qualifying for the Olympic team. And she doesn't do much anymore, but she already has our daughter. We have our daughter who's 6 months old, and she dunked her in our pool last week when we were home. I wasn't quite prepared for that, but no, she's like, she'll be fine. She'll be fine. And she kind of blew in her face and then just threw her under the water.
So right.
I have a feeling this baby's going to be doing flip turns by her second birthday.
Well, of course. I mean, your kid's going to be an athlete. Look at you two. I mean, that's very impressive.
We'll see. But she's been quite a joy in our lives. We're having a lot of fun with her. Well, she's already been on 18 airplane rides, and she's only 6 months old.
18 airplane rides.
Been quite a trooper. Yeah.
I'm trying to think if I've been on 18 in the last 10 years. I don't even think so. I got to get out more. Kevin, good luck in the John Deere Classic, man. Thanks for coming on.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me, guys.
All right. Talk soon. All right. That local guy, Kevin Streelman from Winfield. That's great.
I hope he does well.
Yeah, cool, me too. That's a good tournament. I mean, mm-hmm. it's a lot of people think, oh, it's the John Deere Classic. But, you know, like he was saying, it's a nice warm-up for the British. And a lot of those guys start to tune their game up a little bit there. But it's, as you mentioned, though, it's a lot different golf on the other side of the pond than it is here, with the fact that there's not a lot of water on those holes. Usually it's the crazy rough areas and the deep bunkers. So mm-hmm. It's a little bit different.
How many birdies in a row?
Seven.
Just seven.
Can you imagine doing that?
Seriously, if we play...
I just want two.
I was going to say, if you play 18 holes and I get a birdie, I'm thrilled.
That's big.
Oh, yeah. If I get par, I'm happy.
Right.
Get the birdies.
Par and look for the beer cart.
Exactly right.
Now you're speaking my language. I like it. .720 WGN. Coming up, we're going to talk to Dave Berg. He wrote a new book called Behind the Curtain, an insider's view of Jay Leno's Tonight Show. Jay was number one for years and years and years, and Dave worked for him. Either you're a Jay guy or you're a Letterman guy back in the day. What was everybody?
I was Letterman.
Letterman?
Unabashed, yes. Yeah.
Ann?
I was Letterman, but my parents were Jay.
Letterman. Steve?
Letterman.
Yeah. You know, I was always kind of in the middle. I was never huge fans of either. I guess I would maybe lean toward Jay.
Really?
Kind of, yeah.
Is this a complimentary book, or does it dish some dirt?
Bashing.
Well, the foreword is written by Jay.
Oh, so it's okay. Oh.
Yeah, it's about his days working for Jay Leno.
He didn't read the book, though.
Behind the Curtain is the name of the book. On the phone with us is Dave Berg. Dave, how long did you work for Jay? How many years?
I worked there 18 years.
18 years he worked for Jay Leno, and Jay's a workaholic, isn't he?
I think that's a mild way of putting it. He's pretty much a 24/7 guy.
I mean, nonstop working, and he works on his monologue nonstop, doesn't he? Or he did.
Yeah. No, absolutely. It started, gosh, he would start his monologue the day before, after we taped the show, which was at, 5 o'clock, Pacific time. But anyway, he would go home, take a bunch of monologue jokes with him, and start going over them. He would have the same dinner every night, which was lasagna, because by having the same dinner, he didn't have to worry about having anything getting in the way of the monologue jokes. And he would work on picking maybe half the jokes for the monologue, and he would do that till about 2 a.m. Then he would get up at, say, 6, 6:30, go into work, and then continue to work on the jokes. And a given day, he would go through about 1,500 jokes.
Oh, my gosh. Are you kidding me? Every single day, 1,500 jokes.
Exactly. Right.
That is just crazy. I mean, that's nuts.
I know. And he would edit them down to about 24.
Well, I got to ask you about something. I saw the 60 Minutes piece on Jay Leno, which I thought was great, painted him in a very nice light. I also saw the final show. I thought he went out gracefully, and then he went away, and then suddenly he turns up on Arsenio Hall. Why did he turn up on Arsenio? I just wanted Jay to stay out of sight, and then I wanted him to turn up on David Letterman during Dave's last year.
Right. I get it. But the thing is, Arsenio Hall was always a very, very good friend of the show and a good friend of Jay's. So when the word came out that they were going to renew Arsenio, it was very special for Jay to be there and make that announcement on the air. As to Letterman, I think an appearance, I don't think that's out of the cards.
So you think that's going to happen in the next year?
I do. I think the only thing standing in the way would be Jimmy Fallon, because Jay wants to support Jimmy. Appearing on a competitor might not help. But I do think he will appear on Letterman at some point.
Well, I read that Letterman and Jay have been talking. Is that true?
That is true. Yes, they have.
That's going to happen. That's absolutely
going to
happen.
I agree with you. Yes.
The book is called Behind the Curtain. We're talking with Dave Berg, who worked with Jay Leno for many, many years. You talk about some of the guests in your book. Eddie Murphy had a lot of demands for the green room. Can you talk about that?
Oh, I'm happy to talk about it, but it's not quite the way that it's been portrayed in the press. When I took my job at The Tonight Show, I did not have a background in entertainment. I had come from the world of news. And so it was sort of a new world to me. And one of the things that struck me when I went there is basically how undemanding celebrities are, how they would just basically come in, do their job on the show, and then they would go home. And so one day, Eddie Murphy shows up, and he has a list of what he wanted in his dressing room. And it was, different flavored Snapple, Dr. Brown's cream soda, Snickers, Milky Way, Dr. Brown's root beer, that sort of thing. Well, what struck me is how odd that it was, because this is back in 1994. This is, Eddie's at the height of his career. If he had asked us to fly him to Paris, we would have done it. We would have done it. And I'm thinking, what is this? He has a list. He wants Snapple. I just thought it was odd. It wasn't demanding. It wasn't a demand. It was just a list.
When you think of Jay Leno and the Tonight Show, what episode do you think of? Let me ask the crew. Andrea, what do you think of when you think of Jay Leno? What do you think? Andy?
The Hugh Grant interview.
Hugh Grant!
Yeah, of course.
Hugh Grant was the turning point, wasn't it, Dave?
Absolutely the turning point. Absolutely. Up until that appearance, and not that I'm keeping track of the specifics, but it was July 10th, 1996.
Okay.
That made a huge difference. Up until that point, we had been number two to David Letterman. For 2 years, we had been number two. And when Hugh Grant came on the show after having a dalliance with a Hollywood hooker, and Jay asked him, what the hell were you thinking? Our ratings went through the ceiling, and we became number one, and we stayed number one for two decades.
I mean, that's pretty impressive.
And President Obama, too, was...
The first sitting president. How did you book Obama on the show?
That was a 5-year process. Mm-hmm. And I had been watching the Democratic convention in 2004, and there was a speaker named, you know, Illinois State Senator Barack Obama. I had never heard of him, and I'm watching him, and I'm going, this guy's the best speaker I have seen since Ronald Reagan. He's going to be the future of the Democratic Party. So I started calling his people the day after that. Now, the interesting thing is, I had called about maybe once a week for the following 5 years. The interesting thing is, it was Jay Leno who actually made the call and booked the president. One day we were, you know, sitting in the conference room, and Jay said, let's call the White House right now. And I said, well, they might be busy. He said, no, let's just call them right now. And so Robert Gibbs gets on the phone and says, hey, the president is here. Why don't you just speak to him? And Jay made the offer, and the president said, when would you like to have me on the show?
Oh, jeez. I mean, that's exactly what we're going to do after the show today, to put the president on Steve's show next week.
Call the Oval Office.
Yes, we'll just call the White House.
5 years, yeah.
How do you get the phone number to the White House? You just call the direct line, the one that's listed? See, they have the inside number. We don't have that number. That is why. Behind the curtain, Dave Berg on the phone with us. And Dave, how much did celebrities get to appear on The Tonight Show?
They didn't come on the show to make money. They got $500 an appearance.
$500, that's it. Everybody.
I know, but...
Of course. I'm sorry, Dave, go ahead.
No, that's okay. All I'm saying is, if you were a struggling comedian, you needed that $500. If you're an actor and you're promoting a multi-million dollar film, it's sort of chump change.
Right. I mean, is Brad Pitt taking the $500? What's he doing with it? Are you just sending it to his charity, or do you write him a check?
A lot of times they just say, you know, send it to my charity. Yeah.
And that's the easiest way to do it. But $500 is $500. I mean, for
exactly.
You and I, that's some nice coin.
Well, I'm with you.
And anybody drunk on the show? Anybody show up hammered?
Well, let's just say maybe somebody showed up and he slurred his words a little bit one day.
Who was it?
It was Quentin Tarantino.
Well, of course.
Well, here's the thing. We decided our big problem with guests is that not that they were divas, not that they were demanding, but that many of them got nervous. So we decided to have a little bar, and we called it the J Bar.
Mm-hmm.
And 99.99% of the time, it worked. Johnny Carson used to do it.
Right.
One day, Quentin Tarantino, the great director, shows up. He's slurring his words, and what was interesting is during his appearance, it was still an excellent performance. He's making all kinds of references to Johnny Carson and Dean Martin, and, you know, back in those days, alcohol was a huge part of the humor.
Right.
And I'm thinking, this guy is making his own little movie right now. He's doing an homage to Johnny Carson.
Remember Carson used to smoke on set? He used to have the cigarette and just smoke, have the ashtray to his left. I mean, that is just so odd now that you think about it. In almost two decades with Jay, what's your favorite guest over the years? I'm sure you've been asked that.
Yes, but I love that question. I devote an entire chapter to it. Because it's not somebody you would expect. It was John F. Kennedy Jr. And I think the reason for that is he truly represented American royalty, and he wasn't anything like I thought that he would be.
Mm-hmm.
It took me 6 years to get him to come on the show because he didn't think he would be good enough. He did not think he would be good enough.
Wow.
You know, and when we finally booked him, he was only available on the day that Jerry Seinfeld was going to be on the show, and we had promised, you know, Jerry, first guest. That's a big deal, and, you know, to be the first guest. And so I thought, oh, my gosh, I'm going to have to call John Kennedy and tell him he's going to be second guest, and he's going to drop out after I put 6 years into this. Well, he gets on the phone. I tell him, and he says, Maybe I shouldn't do the show because nobody's going to want to see me after they see Jerry Seinfeld.
Jeez.
Humble. Yeah. Anyway, he ended up doing the show and did a great job.
I mean, you forget about JFK Jr. What a stud he was. Man.
Oh, my. Yes. I say that. Even I agree with you there.
And, Dave, are you a Hawks fan? Is that true?
Oh, my gosh. Yes. to put it mildly, we went to they should have won the Stanley Cup.
Let's just say that.
Mm-hmm.
You live in Los Angeles. How does that work?
Well, I'm from Chicago. I went to Thornridge High School. I went to Northwestern University. I am from Chicago.
Nice. I like that. Yes, they should have won the Stanley Cup, and it's still, can you imagine being a player? I mean, it still bugs us to this day. Being a player, I mean, how do you get over that?
I don't know. I can't get over it.
That's rough. Dave Berg, Behind the Curtain is the name of the book, an insider's view of Jay Leno's Tonight Show. Dave, good to talk to you. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me on. The book comes out July 10th in a couple of days.
All right. Thank you, buddy. It's 720 WGN. Pete in for Steve Cochran. Steve back tomorrow, taking the day off. Thanks to Dave Berg. This is all Jay Leno had to do. Stay out of sight for a year. You turn up on Letterman, you're bigger than life, but he had to turn up on Arsenio, and we all knew Arsenio was going to be canceled because it was the worst talk show on television.
Mm. Brutal.
It was terrible. So we renewed them. Does he get paid for a second season since he got renewed?
I don't know.
I would imagine.
I think that's how it works in Hollywood if you get renewed again.
Boy, it was bad.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
I was going to say it was the same show as before, only it was worse. You know what I mean? It just wasn't.
It was the same show as before, but worse. But worse. Is that what they say about us on a daily basis?
No.
Wait, this was like yesterday's show, but
just a little worse.
A little bit worse. This is nice. We're all hanging out, having a good time. That's good stuff. You can text us here in the Allstate Showcase Studios at 312-981-7200. When is Letterman retiring? Do we know? They say sometime
next year, right?
Is it next spring? Is he going to step down?
Is it the end of next season?
I think it might be at the end of next season. So end of the 2015 season, whatever that is.
The end?
Well, the television season, yeah.
Right. So that means May.
Yeah, probably about May.
So June. May sweeps, he's done. Mm-hmm.
2015, yeah.
And then Colbert probably takes over a month later like Jimmy Fallon did. Does anybody know Stephen Colbert's real personality? Because they said it's going to be different from the Colbert Report because he plays a character.
Yeah, he's not a conservative, like, high-strung, uptight guy.
Right, but that's what made him what he is. So is he going to be a different person when he takes over Dave's job?
I think what made him what he is his excellent interviewing.
Huh.
And his love of pistachio nuts.
Mm-hmm. She's making a boatload of money on those. And who takes over after Letterman for Craig Ferguson? Have they made an announcement?
Yeah, that's McHale. Joel McHale.
Joel McHale's taking over?
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody loves him, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The Soup?
The Soup, right. Baby.
I mean,
and
very...
Community.
Yeah, Community is, you know, I try to watch it, and then, I mean... Yeah, a lot of Second City actors on there, but still, I just can't get through it. So Joel McHale's taking over.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. Who's taking over The Soup?
Greg Kinnear.
Aisha Taylor.
What happened to the guy that used to be on after Letterman? Craig Kilborn.
Oh, gosh. He is a jerk.
He was in Old School?
Yes,
remember?
He was, right.
What happened to him? Didn't he want to go back to acting, and he just fell out of sight?
Yeah. Should have stayed at ESPN.
Right.
Right. He's just gone. So somebody's got to take over The Soup. Guess I need to call my agent.
Yeah, there you go.
Let me take a break and we'll give him a call. I've said this to Steve Cochran, and I'll say it again live on the air, and I'll say it to everybody in this crew.
Okay.
We need a camera behind the scenes because the verbal garbage that comes out of everybody's mouths here. First of all, nobody listens to anybody.
What?
People just talk. We talk over each other.
No, we don't.
It's ridiculous.
No, we don't.
Yes, it is.
No.
And we've been having the conversation. I wanted to play Brandy by Looking Glass, uh-huh. And nobody knows what that song is besides Andy, and bothers me.
Yep.
And then Andy was singing it.
Steve, you know the song,
I know,
right?
I know the song, 1972. I just don't like it.
Brandy, you're a fine girl.
Good wife you would be.
See, I don't like to do the lyrics. I like to kind of draw them out like I'm drunk.
I like the rendition. I should play a little of it.
Hold on
like
here. Let me play it as we bring her up. Hold on.
She's never heard it, I'm sure.
Oh, I should have cued it in. Hold on, let's fast forward. Hold on, okay. Uh-huh, yes, hold on. Here she comes. Pete McMurray in for Steve Cochran, by the way. Okay. Brandy. It's been 15 years since Brandy Chastain's winning penalty kick and the most famous sports bra advertisement in history. She's a World Cup champion and a soccer mom. It's Brandy Chastain. Brandy, how you doing, sister?
I'm so good. Thanks for making me smile with the song.
Oh, do you play a lot of Looking Glass at your house?
Oh, yeah, all the time.
Yeah. I mean, nobody remembers that band. I mean, that's crazy. Hey, I wanted to ask you about the World Cup. Is it so much bigger this time around because of social media with Twitter and Facebook and the whole deal?
Well, there's no doubt that social media and what SAP is putting out about the analytics that comes along with it, the data shows that soccer is all the buzz. It's, you know, everybody's talking about it. Billions of bits of chatter are going out. We as a country are the chattiest group on social media, and we love that. I think what the fan enjoys these days is feeling like they're a part of the game, that they can comment live, that they can give their opinion, some of it good, some of it not as good, but ultimately that the experience is for everyone, not just the players and coaches that are out on the field.
What do you think of the World Cup so far?
Oh, my gosh. I've been in soccer heaven. I love it. I'm actually sad that we're at the semifinal stage because I just love watching multiple games every day of the week. But ultimately, what I love about this World Cup is that countless of millions of kids in this country will possibly for the first time see the World Cup and remember the World Cup and live those dreams out daily at practice or out on the field on game days, on the weekends, and aspire to potentially be that next Tim Howard or that Clint Dempsey that are trending ever so popular right now on social media.
That is so funny that you say that. You're a soccer mom now. How many kids do you have?
I have two.
You have two kids? How old are they?
25 and 8.
25 and 8. Well, I have an 8-year-old, and Charlie is so into the World Cup that he's trading cards with his friends.
I know. Isn't it great?
Yes. I mean, he loves it, and I think it is very cool, and it's fun to watch a sport through your kids, and I'm sure you've experienced that, and you're going through that again.
Oh, no doubt. You know, as a player, I love soccer, and myself and my teammates were constantly feeling like we had to be on our soapboxes talking about how great soccer was, and now, you know, again, SAP and the social media analytics shows us that people are talking about it. They want to be involved. They love it. They have favorite players. They have, you know, their favorite game that's happened. I know that right now Brazil is trending in terms of what people think about being they'll be the next World Cup champion or at least they'll win this game against Germany. But ultimately that soccer is, again, having this uptick and this enthusiasm for young kids, that's exciting for them to be able to go out to the field, to mimic the things that they've seen in the World Cup, the fancy footwork, the hard work, the get it done, gritty mentality of the U.S. You know, this is really positive for soccer and the future of soccer in this country.
Brandy, you and Mia, your whole team were such role models for so many young girls and young women playing soccer. I mean, do you see that today? I mean, more and more girls are getting involved with sports and looking back and thinking, you know, you really paved the way for a lot of, you know, schools that didn't even have all-girls soccer teams or golf teams or whatever sport maybe they were in.
Well, there's no doubt that 99 was I guess it was a turning point in the social fabric of sport in this country that, you know, the World Cup gave validity to the female athlete, not just to the female soccer player. You know, Title IX, obviously, in 1972, the law enacted to give equal opportunity in the educational environment and therefore scholarships being available to girls in various sports across the board. You know, my husband coaches at the collegiate level at Santa Clara. My sister-in-law is the head women's soccer coach at DePaul University there in Chicago. Hmm. So that girls are having a chance to participate and women are having a chance to learn lessons that are learned on the field but that go off the field in business, that are life-changing moments, is so satisfying to me that soccer was a part of the reason that has happened. Gosh, it's the icing on the cake.
We're talking with Brandy Chastain. You brought up your husband. You married your college coach.
I did. Lucky for him, huh?
Good for you. I think that's great. You know, we were talking earlier about one of the most famous pictures in all of sports is you with your sports bra on. And that was one of those moments that we all look back and say, wow, what a great moment. But there was people that complained at the time that you took off your shirt. Do you get any of that backlash to this day?
Oh, no. I would say that, you know, the chatter that happens about 99 and you know, the World Cup and that moment have been 99.9% positive. And, again, you know, if there were social media at the time, and what we're seeing right now through the social media analytics from SAP is that, you know, people are paying attention. And I think the chatter then would have been, what an awesome moment, what a great World Cup, you know. It would have been more people going to a stadium to watch a female sporting event and participating in a way that they never had before. So the trend was really positive. And what I loved about, you know, the quote-unquote controversy of the 0.1% maybe was that it gave me a chance to talk about the greatness of soccer and what it's meant to my life.
Right.
Given to me as a person off the field, you know, the ability to have communication skills, to make tough decisions under pressure, to stand up for myself, to be able to celebrate the good things that I do. That's what that image to me means. And for me to be able to coach my young son and to coach women at the collegiate level, you know, to impact them in a positive way, I think would have been the trend on social media had that been around at the time.
And if Twitter was around, you'd have your bra would have its own hashtag. And by the way, where is the sports bra to this day?
Today it resides in my home in a frame in the guest room. So when you come and visit me, you can stay.
Nice.
Cool.
I like That's in awesome. The guest room. That's nice. Brandi Chastain. Brandi, great to talk to you.
You too. Thank you so much.
All right. It's 720 WGN.
You're a fine girl.
Ah, yes. It's good to be back. Steve Alexander's like, I remember this college.
Running around.
Yes.
You got it right this time,
Brandi. Nice. That's okay. All right. Brandi Chastain. So the bra is in a frame in the guest room.
Yeah. So, and we, was that an invitation to come visit her?
I don't think it was.
I think yes. She invited us.
Sounded like it.
Yeah.
I would invite us. We're fun. You guys can sing the song.
Yeah.
To her.
Serenade her right at the front door.
She is 36. Is that right, Ann?
No, 46.
No, she's not 46.
Yes,
hold
she
on.
Is.
No way.
Yes, she
looks good.
Oh, my gosh. You're right.
I'm always right.
Good.
Not really.
How old is her husband?
50-something.
Yeah, he's like 53, right? So he's not that much older.
Hold on.
So they're around the same age.
He's born in 68.
Quick math. Her husband?
Oh, wait, she is. Forget it.
What?
Yeah, I was going to say.
This. Wow. I feel like I bring the shows down to JV squad status when I host. I don't know what happens here. It's like we forget about things, and that's what happens.
Oh, we lose our minds.
Well, she threw me when she said she had a 25-year-old child.
Well, yes. Wait a minute. I mean, things happen.
Well, that's her step.
Oh, it's her step.
Well, yeah,
got it. Okay, so she has an 8-year-old. But it's true. If you have kids, they're following the World Cup. It's fun to watch with your kids. I mean, they're into it. Mm-hmm. I love it. And I'm sure you get that. And my son is trading cards. Who's the guy that broke his back? Nomar?
Garcia-Pata.
No, not Nomar.
That'd be Mia Hamm's husband, yeah.
Yes.
Do they come in bubblegum packs, these cards?
All right, we are done. Is John Williams around?
Oh,
are we
John,
talking to John?
Us.
Hello.
John?
Save us.
No, you're on your own, man. I'm so not joining this.
Listen, I was listening to you yesterday. What a bad visual of John Williams standing inside a supermarket wearing a crown trying to do a video of Mary Tyler Moore.
And then a bunch of people in khaki pants and red vests looking at us going, are they videotaping him touching the bacon?
And people think we're weird.
I know, but that was a lot of my Sunday with my producer, Kristen, making this video with me wearing a crown at a grocery store. And I don't even want to explain it, except you'll eventually see the video. But we never felt more juvenile delinquent than we did when we were actually surreptitiously videoing me fondling bacon.
Kind of the way I feel when I fill in for Steve Cochran,
you know,
here.
We've come full circle because we started off the show with Kevin saying when he grills meat, he touches the meat.
He touches his meat.
Okay. John Williams.
I'm sorry.
By the way,
John.
I'm not doing my show today.
I'm sorry, John. I love you.
I noticed that John just stays silent. Maybe
good
I should
everybody.
Do that.
I'm all right. So not following this.
By the way, Brandy's husband's 53.
So they're right around the same age. All right, John's up next.